Coming up on today's episode, we break down the Jets' playoff clinching victory against the Flames, including Velarde's Hattie and some line juggling from Bones.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon underscore Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, let's get right into a special edition, a playoff edition of Skates and Plates here as the Winnipeg Jets book their ticket officially. No real concerns after the win against LA. No real concerns that they were going to miss the postseason, but it becomes official on Thursday, April the 4th, that the Jets will be back into the postseason, likely in that third spot in the Central after taking down the Flames 5-2. So we'll break all of that down, maybe a macro look as well, but the season as a whole, now that goal number one is in the books. Playoff spot. Let's do this. Joining me once again, CJOB's Tyson Rewicki is here. T-Dot, how are we doing tonight?
We're doing pretty good. Pretty good. Clinch a playoff spot. We got some more whiteout parties. That's the lifeblood. Lifeblood of turning spring into summer here in Winnipeg. So pumped for at least, hoping for, who knows, maybe 12 whiteout parties. But
I don't know. We had that. A massive footy result across the pond this afternoon. As Chelsea is back. We are back, baby.
That was insane. Turn that game on right before the two goals happen, and this is just, you know, somebody to watch in the background, and then that happens. Like, come on, man.
For those that don't know, and I know nobody cares, so I'll make this quick. Chelsea scores in the 98th minute to tie it, wins it at the 99th minute. Madness happens against Manchester United. Even sweeter than it happens against Man U. But what was interesting about the game, and I'm going to tie this around to the Winnipeg Jets here, Tyson. Just it's not even a soccer thing necessarily, but for those that don't know, I'm a huge Chelsea fan. And with Man U up 3-2 for the majority of the second half, that was kind of my breaking point. And I was like, these effing losers, entitled, brat, spoiled, lazy, no heart, soft. What did Tortorella say? No balls. Like, I was so done, right? Like, I couldn't take it anymore. And then in the span of 2 minutes, it's like we are right back in it. I always believed in them. This is the turning point. It's funny how quickly narratives can change in sports around either an individual or a team based off of just a couple of moments in such a short amount of time. Thankfully, the Jets aren't as circus-like as the Chelsea Football Club. But it's just interesting, Tyson, to me, how quickly narratives and vibes and things like that can do a complete 180 when in all reality we're talking about potentially inches deciding, you know, whether it's playoff positioning, whether it's championships, whether it's legacies, things like that. Just kind of got me thinking, you know, like, should we really be having these big macro looks on single game outcomes and results when things can change at the drop of a hat? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of interesting, at least. I can do this in a positive way because my team won, but I don't know what you think.
Well, it's kind of a double-edged sword because, you know, you're totally right that anything can happen. Any team has a puncher's chance in any game on any given day, but trends are trends for a reason too, right? Like, there is that added element to it where, you know, like, if you're noticing things that a team does over a long stretch of seasons for multiple seasons, I think it's safe to assume that, you know, maybe that team falls back on some tendencies, some bad habits, because bad habits are always going to tend to peek through, especially come playoff time, come when the games matter and everyone's a little bit more dialed in. But that's the beauty of sports.
You know, that's all it is. That's it right there, Tyson. It's the beauty of sports. It's why sports are fun, that you can act stupid like that, right? I found that interesting too, because I was thinking about that after the game ended, and I wasn't able to help myself during the Jets game as well, because I had a couple narrative moments there on top of it. And it, you know, it works out well. The Jets get the win. They're into the playoffs, all that stuff. But I found myself victim to that once again. I guess we could start there with this, because the bizarre moment of the game actually happened when the Jets tied the game up in the first period at, I believe it was the tie. Was it the tie-in or the second goal? I can't remember. But it was the second goal. You're right. So it was when the Jets take the lead, Perfetti finds Ehlers. Ehlers kind of fans on it. Puck goes through Wolf, 2-1 Jets. And the game kind of completely flips on its head there, because the coaching staff makes the decision to go back to the lineup that caused that 6-game losing streak in effect. And we see Connor Schlafly, Vilardi together, and then Ehlers back down to line two with Perfetti and Monahan. The Jets get blasted in the second period, culminating in the tying goal with that top line on the ice. Before the Jets make the switch, things turn around and they skate away with a 5-2 victory. I'll be honest with you, Tyson. My initial take while that was going on in the second period there is that the Winnipeg Jets are not going to go anywhere with Rick Bonus behind the bench. That was my initial thought there. Just because of it looked like the insane stubbornness of a coach, thinking that this is the only way that we're going to be able to win hockey games. It's my way or the highway. Stats be damned, and away we go. But it changes almost immediately, because he flips it around when he sees a poor effort by that line inside their own zone. And then ultimately the Jets find a way to get to overcome a bit of a push by Calgary in that second. And they play one of their better third periods in quite some time there. Bones after the game then says, whether you believe him or not, said that he liked the way Perfetti and Ehlers looked on that second goal for the Jets, wanted to see them together for a little bit, and then made the switch after Calgary scored. I don't believe that at all, because I don't think it's a coincidence that the top line gets scored on, and then all of a sudden I don't want to see Ehlers and Perfetti together. You know what I mean? Like I just think Bones can't help himself. And you saw him go back to what he truly believes is this team's top line. But I do like that he was a little bit adaptable there and was able to switch things to probably where they should be with how everybody's played over the last several games and the last couple of weeks. And now maybe I'm feeling like, you know what, this team's got a chance to go deep, right? So I can't stop flip-flopping. Maybe it's because the postseason's coming a little bit closer here. Maybe it's because the weather's warmer. I don't know, but I just found it interesting. The talk about narratives watching the soccer game creeps over into the hockey game here. Fortunately, you know, we can look at this through a positive lens now for the Jets. But, man, they can make their wins super enjoyable through 60 minutes for their fans. These days, I guess it's just baby steps before, you know, get into full 60-minute effort. But a wild game, a very bizarre game where the Jets ultimately end up with a 5-2 win, but Calgary looked pretty damn good and pretty damn dominant for a large chunk of that game.
Yeah, and after watching that Bones presser, like you mentioned, I don't think that's the reason why he made that switch, but let's say that it is. Let's say he's being completely honest. I don't get how your reasoning can be, I like the way they looked on one play, and then completely ignore how the Shifley Ehlers Vilardi line has looked since being put back together. Right? Like, it's,
yeah.
If you're actually basing the way that you set your lineup based off one shift, there needs to be some serious evaluations. And that's not just it's not pushing a narrative against Bones, because it's just a fact. Like, that's just like what he's prone to doing when he doesn't feel comfortable with the way the game's going. And
yeah, he goes back to what he's most comfortable with.
Yeah. And what if that happens in the playoffs? Like, what if he did this in the playoff game and that line gets scored on, but, you know, you're not playing a team like Calgary, and you end up losing a game because you just made a pointless lineup decision for no reason. Like, that's a very serious concern going into these playoffs, that you're willing to just completely disrupt the Lions' momentum, chemistry that they've started to build up earlier in the season, now kind of rebuilding on that chemistry. I just, like, how does that help anyone? You're putting Ehlers and Connor both in situations that isn't helping them at that point in the game. Like, sure, if you have a bad game and you really didn't like the way the line looked, like, let's say the Ehlers and Vlardy are responsible for two goals against, and you're like, oh, we can't have that kind of effort in a game. I totally understand. But to base your lineup decisions off one shift, like, I don't know, man. Like, that's...
But that happened after the power play, and, like, the lines were kind of all juggled up, right? And it wasn't even... It was just weird, because it wasn't even that... Like, Perfetti makes a great pass and has great vision there, but, like, Ehlers fans on it. It's not like it's this highlight real goal or anything like that, where it's like, ooh, we might need to see these guys for a handful of shifts moving forward in this game. It was just bizarre. That was the only thing to me. Like, that decision, the fact that, you know, you gave the new look lineup 3.5 periods before you switched things up. And then it's almost like he realized his mistake after that 2-2 goal with an awful effort from Kyle Connor to get to the point there on the shot that ultimately deflects in. It was bizarre coaching. I there's really no other way to put it. Like, it didn't really make sense while we saw it happening, and I don't totally understand the logic behind his reasoning when he spoke about it in the presser post game.
Well, he even said too. He's like, I that Monahan Perfetti Ehlers line didn't look good when they were together before.
Yeah,
and he's like, so I figured I'd try him again. It's like, what? That's like, I mean, you don't want to be too negative after a win, like, playoff spot, but man, like, that is just malpractice.
I know what you mean. I feel bad being this negative on it, but it didn't make sense. And I thought it was the predominant storyline amongst Jets fans watching the game, so it's something that you have to talk about, but it just didn't. It was weird that it took six straight losses, I should say, for something to change. And then it just felt like at the drop of a hat, I got to go back to it. Like, it's like he can't quit it. He's addicted to Connor Scheifele-Vlardy, and there's no solution for it. And so thankfully, you know, they got to turn around. They were able to pick up the victory. And while the first two periods were a little more roller coaster for my liking, the third period, the Jets, they acted like a playoff team, a professional team, a mature team, took it to the Flames, left no doubt that they were going to skate out of there with the 2 points. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be tough to get a read on it. I would imagine, and I think you'll agree, Tice, that we see Ehlers, Scheifele, Vlardy suit up for the next game. And then, I mean, Nino's going to miss a handful of games. But he's got to stick with this until that top line gives him reason not to, right? On top of it, Kyle Connor, I thought, had his best game against LA in quite some time. The second line looked great as well. But would you agree that what we saw in terms of the lineup ending the game is what we see starting the next game on Saturday night?
Well, I don't see how you can't. Right, like, if you change the lineup after a win like that, then I don't even know what we're doing at that point. Like, it's just, let these guys have a consistent play time with each other for a little bit. Like, is that so hard to ask? It seems like for a team that's been in such a comfortable playoff spot for so long that they juggle their lines like crazy, almost every three, like. And it wouldn't be juggling lines to fix the top line either. It's juggling all the other lines to see if you can find a combination in the bottom, I guess, bottom nine, technically, to kind of get something else going besides that, if the top line's not going, and it wasn't working. And then you switch to Ehlers going back on that top line. They kind of start to produce a little bit more. And like you said, Kyle Connor had his best game. Like, let's see if we can maybe put our players in better positions than we're putting them in. Like, I feel like it's such a novel concept with this team sometimes. And it's just frustrating.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. And I think there's a lot of people that were confused and upset and irritated by the coaching decisions in that game and maybe over the last little bit as well. So we'll keep an eye on that over the weekend.
Since we're mentioning Bones presser, I just wanted to mention the Neil Pionk quote that he had that I thought was pretty, I think it was just interesting that it kind of fell along the lines of what we were saying in the last episode about how he wanted to get Neil Pionk going. He's been fine, but he's a good player and he has all the skills in the world. That sounds like a guy trying to boost a guy's confidence. Don't you think?
And like not happy with the play either. You know, it's, We haven't seen Neil Pionk elevate his game since going beside Morrissey there. So I think that's the nicest. I thought that was the nicest way he could have handled that. Where he's fine. Fine is never fine. Whether it's in sports, in life, especially in relationships and love. If you ever get the fine, it is game over. So I actually thought he maybe sent a little bit of message by saying, oh, yeah, he was fine.
Okay means you're fine.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine. That is, I got chills down the back. Oh, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight.
Shaky in bed, night parents.
I got to do a Starbucks run tomorrow. I can't get if that happened. So the lineups are a little bit iffy. The one certainty that I would say that we will see happen Saturday against Minnesota is Gabe Vilardi is going to be the number one right winger on that top line. That was a welcome performance from number 13. Speaking of positives, let's try to shift it to a more jovial tone here. It's pretty wild that I said this on Winnipeg Sports Talk last week, I believe, about the struggling power play. And like what can be done to fix it. And I feel pretty Spartan saying get Gabe Vilardi healthy. Because I think it wasn't a coincidence that he goes out, PP sucks, he comes back in. It's a completely different unit. I mean, the Monahan addition was massive, no doubt about it, for the power play, but it's just a different group out there when Vilardi's ready to go. I don't think there's three better net front guys in the entire NHL than Gabe Vilardi right now. He's on a different level. And good to see him get rewarded. Good to see him get the confidence going. Now let's just knock on wood, bang on wood, and pray that the dude can just get a break and stay healthy for the next little bit. Because you saw the ultimate value that he's going to bring to the Jets come playoff time. I think we're going to see an even better Gabe Vilardi by the time game one of that first round matchup for the Jets gets underway. But man, oh man, what a performance from him. He was dynamite in that one.
Well, and you mentioned he is one of the best net front presences right now, but also like the amount of plays that just get opened up when he's has the puck on the goal line, like the lanes that open up, it provides passes up to Morrissey when all the whole penalty kill has to collapse down more whenever Gabe Vilardi has the puck. Like it does create so many more avenues for that power play to operate. And it gives you there's not many guys who can make those deflect, especially that deflection that Kyle Connor made or set him up on the power play goal. Like people don't real like how soft of hands you have to put that puck where he did off that hard of a pass, more so a shot. Like he knows exactly where to put his stick. It's a perfect tip almost every single time too. Like it's just a game changer for that power play because it lets them kind of get out of that habit of keeping it along the perimeter where you have a guy like that who Shifley can set the puck down low and kind of recharge on the half wall and have lanes open back up for him that to get the puck across the corner. Like it's completely it makes the power play dynamic. And we've seen that over the past since he's come back. And when he has been healthy, it's just a completely different unit. And it's no shame against Tyler Toffoli, who I think is also a good power play guy, but he's more fit for that bumper slot. There's just not many guys on the Jets, not just on the Jets, but in the league who can manage the puck below the goal line like that and make those kind of plays. Like it's very special. And it's, you don't know what you got till you have it sort of thing. And then once you have it and you see it's not there, you really realize like, oh man, this is kind of our, this is the the straw that stirs the drink, really, for this power play.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, he's the most important guy on a power play unit that has a Norris candidate, a number one center, and a guy that's got 50 goal potential. Like, he's been that good down low, and it's, you know, the perfect personnel now where, you know, you have Vilardi, who's just a load to handle down there. He's skilled enough to score off that, you know, kind of cheeky little pass outside the net. He's good enough to bring it in and make a move on the goalie, or he can set somebody up. And then that allows Monahan to play the bumper role to perfection. And we've seen him. He's one of the best at deflecting. Yeah, how many deflection goals has he had over the last couple of weeks, right? So, I mean, power play, yeah, that was very, very evident to everybody that watched the game that he was excellent there. But I think even 5-on-5, he's slowly starting to round into form. And again, I just like the way I like the way Ehlers, Scheifele, and Vilardi play off each other. It just seems like they kind of have this innate sense of where each other are going to be. They're almost thinking a step ahead before things happen about where to pass it, where to skate to, different things like that. I think that's why people were so mad about the line change that happened, you know, after the, you know, midway through the game, whatever it was, because, you know, they were kind of slowly starting to round into form, and we're seeing extended offensive zone shifts by the top line instead of extended D zone shifts by the top line. But that was definitely the most positive development in this game, is that Vilardi is back. And if they can get the guy that was going in and around December there, interesting times. He's going to have to, right? If it's going to be Colorado or Dallas, either one, like, if they've got excellent tertiary fourth, fifth options up front, they need Gabe Vilardi to be this good to have a chance come playoff time.
Well, and he could still score 25 goals this year. While missing nearly half the season. Like, that's, guys, don't do that. Like, he would be up in the upper echelon of goal scorers if he kept his pace up all year. So that's just the biggest thing with him, is he just has to stay healthy. And, like, obviously the enlarged spleen is complete. Like, that's, you can't predict that. Like, yeah. That's not an injury prone type of injury, but it's just, if he can keep the, you know, like, those lower body injuries to a minimum, I mean, he's going to be a really scary, like, potential perennial 40 goal scorer for this team for a while.
That's awesome. Thanks, BLD. Two other notes I want to mention from the game. You mentioned injuries. Looks fortunate enough that the Jets avoided a couple major, major question marks. And speaking of major, yeah, the refs absolutely got that right on Pospisil with the elbow to the chin of Josh Morrissey. I'm kind of surprised they handled that as well as I get missing things on the ice as it happens. Like, it's tough, it's fast, but that 1000% needed to be reviewed. They reviewed it and then made the correct call. Good that Morrissey's going to be okay, but this Pospisil kid, like, you gotta figure things out, man. Like, give your head a shake. This has been, what, three times against the Jets alone? I don't even know what he's done against the rest of the league, but three headshots against the Jets alone in the last year and a half.
Well, and even Darren Bomby made a great point, too. There's three, this, I mean, assuming he gets a hearing for this one, it'll be three hearings in the regular season alone, plus there was the one in the preseason on Perfetti.
Crazy.
Like, this guy's just a little rat, too, and then he just bottles up after that hit, like, guys just chicken, you know what? Like, these guys, those guys, I like, even a guy like Rempe, like, he's a goon too. Like, he is a goon, but at least he's gonna answer the bell.
Like, oh, Rempe's answering the bell right now. He fought some guy in the streets in New York.
I can hear him coming up the elevator right now, and I am terrified. But
let me in.
But honestly, like, those kind of guys too, like, and Nick Cousins is in that same boat. Like, if you're gonna do that stuff, at least, you know, like, have the balls to answer
for you. Yeah, or just don't do it, throw a flying elbow into, I mean, it doesn't matter if they're a star or not. Don't throw a flying elbow into the opposition's chin. That would be where I would start with him.
For me, if I was Department of Player Safety right now, I'm going minimum 8 games.
He is not getting 8 games for that. I can guarantee that.
But then, I mean, we always have this conversation about player safety whenever it comes up. But like, and I agree with the Brendan Dillon suspension. I know that's a little bit of a hot take amongst Jets fans, but that's worse than the Brendan Dillon hit. And he's got
I get what you're saying.
Like, I don't know.
Dillon at least is, you know, like trying to play the body, and it's his shoulder. Shoulder versus elbow is at least shoulder. You can say is what's the right word? Incidental or accidental?
Yeah,
right. Like it's pretty hard to lift that arm up and catch somebody and be like, oh, oops, didn't mean to jump. Yeah. I wonder what he's going to get. My guess would be, I mean, he gets the misconduct, so they'll probably say that's a game.
So dumb.
I think he gets 2 or 3.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be more than 3.
Here. I got to pull up what the results were, because I feel like I got a 2-game suspension earlier this year.
Yeah, I think the way the NA, look, I'm okay with any blatant headshot like that getting 5+ games, but I just think they're going to look at it. Morrissey came back, didn't miss any time with the game misconduct, 2 to 3 games.
He was, you got 3 games on just under a month ago for boarding Vince Dunn. So clearly, I mean, he's not learning from the suspensions.
Maybe. Okay.
I don't like saying this too much about some NHL players, because I mean, you got to work your ass off to get there. But that guy's a plug. Like, I'm sorry. Like the guy's just a plug.
Well, it doesn't help that every time I watch him play, he takes somebody on the Jets' head off. That's my only like. Boss Pacelli just attacking Jets in the head constantly. So I don't have a very good opinion of him. We'll keep an eye on that and see what the suspension is going to be. Now that you mentioned that, maybe 4 to 5 is probably on the table. I'd be pretty shocked if he got an in-person hearing, though.
We'll see.
This kind of feels like the last, you know, like if you don't want a 10-gamer, smarten up. On top of it, too, I mean, you're like Josh Morrissey said post-game. Do you like money? do you just hate money and you're just throwing it away by cracking guys in the head? So we'll see what happens there. But he's going to get multiple games. No doubt about that. And definitely well earned on his part. The other hit, kind of a weird one on Lowry late in the third period with about 5-6 minutes left. I think it was Rooney. He definitely hits Lowry in the chin there with his shoulder. I don't know. What did you think of that? It was just kind of a weird one to me because Lowry's a little bent down, but he's also 6'5", so you still have to go pretty high up to hit him. I don't think he's going to get a suspension. Definitely, probably it should have been a penalty though at the very least. Like to anytime you're hitting a 6'5" dude anywhere up near the head area, you're kind of going up in some illegal motion. Am I wrong?
Well, and. See, like, I've almost had a problem with some of I feel like this season especially, there's more hits where guys are bent over. You know, and that sounds weird, but, like, I don't know. It seems like more so of those kind of hits are happening now than before, and I wonder if that's a reckless issue on players or a matter of protecting yourself better. But, yeah, like, to me, that's a penalty for sure. I don't know if you can really go any more than that just because it's...
Wasn't it a really hard hit? It didn't look good, though. Like, I was a little worried when you saw it live, hoping Lowry gets up quickly. Thankfully, I mean, the spotters did the right thing, got him off the ice. But that's almost where you would like the double IHF hit to the head rule. Yeah. Not the 2 to 10 necessarily, but just it's 2 minutes for hitting the guy in the head. Like, you just can't do that anymore with what we know, so... Thankfully, it looks like the Jets avoided a major bullet there. Both guys appear to be good to go. I think Bone said after the game that, you know, Lowry taken off the ice, but they weren't too worried about his status post-game there. So positive news for the Jets and a positive result in the game as well. Quickly, Tyson will wrap it up. let's take a quick little macro look at this. Not a lot of people expected the Jets to finish third in the Central to start the year. I believe both of us had them as a wild card team, correct?
I don't think so.
What did you pick the Jets at?
I think I did have them second wild card, and I said I, but with the possibility of falling out.
That's kind of, I think that was the prevailing prediction from most people is bubble team, hopefully sneak in, might fall out. Just looking at the season as a whole, I mean, it's regular season wise, a smashing success. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I know the last six games, that previous six game losing streak is pretty rough, but taking a step back and looking at the 76 games so far as a whole, A plus, like maybe not A plus is probably first place, but the fact that they battled with really, really good teams in Dallas and Colorado for that top spot for the majority of the year, and they've comfortably clinched a playoff spot. I think the regular season went about as good as anybody could have realistically hoped for.
Yeah, and that's even with like long injuries to Kyle Connor and Gabe Vilardi too. With and that was before you made these acquisitions to bolster your forward group too. And I think that, you know, like even throughout the season, guys were stepping up when guys had injuries. Like we're even looking back at a guy like Jonsson Fjällby, who came up and had a really good stretch of play for this team when he was called upon. Like it was just for a large majority of the season. And I mean, you can kind of look at this second half of the second half and draw some negatives from that. But from September to January, this team was without a doubt a top three team in the league, like without question. And, you know, you kind of tail off a tiny bit after, but, you know, you can still say that, you know, you went through a long stretch in that first half of the season and you were grinding out wins and you were dominating teams. Dominating a large majority of teams, not just bad teams. Like I saw a chart from Sportsnet about the Oilers' season this year, where they're 10-2 against, you know, the 27.
Oh, that garbage! Yeah, we don't have to get into that. That was a crap stat. But regardless of that,
but then seeing the way the Jets have performed against teams, you know, what their and their standings wise, like they performed well against everyone. It's not just like it's for the most part over the season they have brought a pretty consistent effort for the most part. And I think, especially coming into this year with all the question marks, you couldn't have a better season for this team. And Chevy finally made that leap where he really added to this team instead of just tinkered.
Yeah, I mean, like the Scheifele-Hellebuyck extensions on before game one of the season, and then being aggressive and making a lot of savvy moves, right? Yeah. Like, is it an overpay for Monahan? Maybe, but in the grand scheme of things, he's fit in pretty well since he's come in so far. To Foley, obviously, everybody was jacked about that. It's obviously perfect world. They would have found a way to maybe be neck and neck with Dallas for tops in the division. But I really believe, like realistically, this is about as good as it could have gotten here for the club. And now it's just going to be, can you recapture that November, December magic and maybe go on a playoff streak of X amount of games with two or less goals allowed? You know what I mean? Like that's going to be the next step that will make this A season an A-plus season. I really believe even if it is a tough first round exit for the team, it's going to be tough to knock down the overall grade all that much, because they really played their asses off outside of this 2 weeks in the end of March here. And it looks, we'll see what happens in the next little bit, but it looks like maybe they've turned a bit of a corner here. And if they can really start to ramp things up in these next 2 to 3 games, then I think Jets fans have every reason to be very excited about a potentially deep playoff run, albeit against a very stiff competition in the Central and Western Conference.
If you win these next stretch of games, like these next 3 games, especially on the road, you're the team no one wants to play against come playoff time. So you do have the ability to kind of strike some fear and instill some intimidation into who's likely going to be Colorado. So now's the time. You can really maybe plant the seed of doubt in Colorado's mind with some big performances coming up.
And that starts Saturday against the Minnesota Wild before that vaunted three-game stretch, Preds, Stars, Avalanche. So things are going to ramp up pretty quickly for the club. At the very least, though, the playoff spot is booked, and we're getting some playoff hockey back in Winnipeg once again, which is always, always a positive sign. But that's going to do it for the episode today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Skates and Plates here on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, with CJOB's Tyson Rewicki once again. We'll get back at it on Tuesday morning, breaking down that game against the Wild, and we'll also be joined by a special guest. A rare interview, a rare third party coming in. Excited to have Garrett Hole join us. So we'll talk about the Jets season as a whole and maybe get a bit of a in-depth analytical look at ideal line combinations and D pairings headed into that postseason matchup, whoever they might face. So should be a beauty of an episode, and can't wait to get Garrett Hole's insights, and appreciate him joining us out there from the West Coast to talk some Jets. So we'll get into all of that with you guys after the weekend, and we'll talk to you Tuesday morning. Until then, though, enjoy the beauty weather. Enjoy the playoff spot. We'll talk soon. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and have fun, everybody. Peace.